Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who joins us by phone today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of them relate to really upset Democrats. And let's start with the good martini. There's going to be this huge protest in Washington on January 21st. That's the Saturday after the inauguration of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. And the media, of course, will cover it to a great extent, no matter how many people show up. This is the Great Women's March. But apparently, there's now a bit of a divide among the protesters about who's really the most oppressed in this country one day after Donald Trump takes office. This is the New York Times story. Many thousands of women are expected to converge on the nation's capital for the Women's March on Washington the day after Donald J. Trump's inauguration. Jennifer Willis no longer plans to be one of them. Ms. Willis, a 50-year-old wedding minister from South Carolina, had looked forward to taking her daughters to the march. Then she read a post on the Facebook page for the march that made her feel unwelcome because she is white. The post, written by a black activist from Brooklyn who is a march volunteer, advised white allies to listen more and talk less. It also chided those who, it said, were only now waking up to racism because of the election. Quote, "You don't just get to join now because you're scared, too. I was born scared." Same thing has happened in Tennessee and Louisiana. Then the story goes on to say, in some ways, the discord is by design. Even as they are working to ensure a smooth and unified march next week, the national organizers said they made a deliberate decision to highlight the plight of minority and undocumented immigrant women and provoke uncomfortable discussions about race. So, Jim, we're all oppressed, apparently, now that Donald Trump is about to become president, but some are more oppressed than others.
You know, Greg, everyone loves uncomfortable discussions when they get to be the ones making other people uncomfortable. No one likes to be on the receiving end of an uncomfortable discussion. And so this is almost, it reads like a perfect parody of our worst stereotypes of the left. I was thinking back as you're describing it, Greg. You think back to the Tea Party movement in 2009, 2010. Now, there are some folks who said, look, tea is short for taxed enough already. To them, the core of the argument was about taxes, which is obviously a major driving issue, was Obamacare. People who did not like the changes, did not trust the Obama administration. For some people, it was a bailout. It was the idea of TARP and the idea of the Rick Santelli, the rant heard around the world discussing the idea of people who did pay for their mortgage paying to bail out people, their neighbors who did not pay their mortgage. There were a lot of different issues all kind of wrapped together in that effort that gave rise to the Tea Party. And undoubtedly, I'm sure there was friction at the time, Greg, but I don't remember a lot of, well, you're not on board with our issues, so you don't get to participate, or you have to sit in the back, or we don't really like working with you guys because we're more of a victim than you are. When you're trying to build a movement, you're trying to bring in as many people as possible. And yes, you're going to have policy differences. You're going to have areas of priority that are different. But if you're trying to, you just had your teeth kicked in by a really bad election result. You want to build allies. You don't want to drive them away. And so this idea of you don't get to feel scared now, why wouldn't you? They feel the same way you do. This is supposed to be empathy. And, of course, they're basically taking somebody's effort at empathy and throwing it back in their faces. So on the one hand, this is very good for conservatives. It might be not good for America, Greg, in that sense of this, like, spoiled children who won't take yes for an answer and who feel this need to drive away people who actually agree with them because they don't agree the right way or because they somehow threaten their hierarchy and the status of victimhood.
All right, let's move on to more divisiveness now as we head to our bad martini. Today kicks off a number of confirmation hearings for Trump cabinet nominees. The most prominent, of course, is Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama, to be attorney general. It's always fun to watch confirmation hearings where senators pretend like they still have an open mind, but ask questions in such a way that it's blatantly obvious how they've already decided to vote, really on both sides of the aisle. But the interesting senator that we're going to talk about today is New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker. CNN reports Democratic Senator Cory Booker is set to testify against Republican Jeff Sessions Wednesday in an unprecedented move during his attorney general confirmation. This would be the first time in Senate history that a sitting senator will testify against another sitting senator for a cabinet post during a confirmation. Quote, "I do not take lightly the decision to testify against a Senate colleague," Booker said, "but the immense powers of the Attorney General combined with the deeply troubling views of this nominee is a call to conscience. And then, Jim, as you report in the Morning Jolt today, there's actually a pretty long history, as far back as Booker's been in the Senate, of these two working together. The 2015 Congressional Gold Medal to those who marched from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama in 1965. Jeff Sessions is also going to be testified against by Georgia Congressman John Lewis. They also were together locking arms, in fact, at a march commemorating Selma. The only way to interpret this, as you point out at the start of your post, it looks like New Jersey Senator Cory Booker is interested in running for president. That's the easiest way to explain a guy whose initial reputation in politics was Mr. Bipartisan throwing himself onto the tracks of an oncoming train of an all-but-certain confirmation. So, shock of all shocks, Cory Booker is opportunistic.
Yeah, the interesting thing, he's opportunistic in a completely different direction now. He used to be Mr. Opportunistic Centrist. Now he's going to be, looks like he's going to be the opportunistic liberal progressive fighter. Greg, you and I are old enough to remember when denouncing the nominee during the course of the Senate debate on the confirmation vote was sufficient. That's just not enough for Cory Booker, and I suppose you could see this as sort of a real plea that he really should have been on the Judiciary Committee. He's really frustrated. He really wanted to be able to denounce him from one of those committee chairs. So instead, he has to testify before it. This is a really bad idea because now it's going to turn into every senator is going to want to be able to testify on all the other nominees. As noted in the Jolt, they had co-sponsored legislation to give the Congressional Medal of Honor to the Selma marchers. And as of this taping, I don't think Booker has testified yet. It'll be interesting to see if he at least acknowledges that. Because, you know, yes, you can say, look, I've worked with this guy. I personally like him, but I don't think he's the right fit for the job. That's a perfectly legitimate position to have. But I don't think that's really what Democrats want to hear. Democrats don't want to hear that Jeff Sessions is a good guy, but maybe a wrong fit for the job. They want to hear that he's a terrible person and that he's racist and he's xenophobic and that he's backwards and, you know, you got to call Jefferson Beauregard in every reference and things like that. So they really have to turn up the rhetoric to 10, and that simply doesn't feel. If Cory Booker really thought Jeff Sessions was the worst guy in the whole wide world, then he wouldn't have co-sponsored with the legislation. He wouldn't have said he was, you know, honored to work with him on that legislation and things like that. So it's not that he, you know, it's not news when a senator is who's got presidential ambitions is opportunistic. It just seems that Booker is doing it in a really transparent and shameful way that probably, you know, indicates that we're going to get into a whole new era of showmanship and grandstanding on the issue of nominees.
What does T-Bone think of Jeff Sessions? We haven't heard that.
Very good. Yes, you know, I'm hoping there's some sort of accusation about Sessions' honesty in this.
This is going to be a long day for Jeff Sessions. He's already gotten grilled by the Batman villain, Pat Leahy, and others on the panel. So he's so far.
Sure, like Lane Enterprises doesn't do any defense profiteering.
All right. Speaking of the Sessions hearings, we move to our crazy martini now. And shock of all shocks, Jim. Code Pink has disrupted the hearing on multiple occasions. Here's just one of them. This was before Sessions even said a word. A couple of the folks from Code Pink were dressed up as Klansmen, and as they were being removed, as they shouted stupid things, here's what people heard.
Wait a minute, you can't arrest me, I'm white! White people don't get arrested! Wait a minute! White people, what do we have to do, wait for the inauguration? What is this craziness? I'm a white man! You cannot take me out of here!
So, Jim, I guess if Code Pink deserves any credit, they at least disrupt hearings in both directions. They did it a little bit during the Obama administration, not nearly as much as they did during the Bush years. But the question is, who keeps funding these people when they accomplish nothing?
Or maybe the question is, maybe the consequences for disrupting a congressional hearing should be a little bit more severe. I mean, I don't know if they just escort them out. Maybe you spend the night in the clink or something like that. Maybe, you know, take them downtown to book them for clearly it's going to be a violation of some law. You want to have a free speech, terrific, but you know the people's business is, you know, is going on here. You need to have decorum. You need to have, let the, you know, the legislative process do its work. The other thing, the more kind of basic fundamental question is that has anyone ever changed their mind on anything because of Code Pink? I mean, is there a less relevant, less decisive, less influential organization? They show up at every one of these things. You can even see the people who agree with Code Pink, who might have every bit as much low opinion of Jeff Sessions, kind of rolling their eyes and saying, oh, God, here we go again. It does nothing. It delays things. It is kind of fundamentally disrespectful to everyone involved. I think Michelle Malkin called it the Berlinization of our national politics. You know, there's a time and a place for everything, and that's not the time and the place. You want to protest outside, go protest outside. But they're trying to hold a hearing in there. And, you know, I actually think the hearing itself will do more to inform the public and do more to illuminate the session's record for the public than any amount of, ranting, shouting, this guy's a racist protest that we're going to see. And so it's kind of this, you want to do it outside. It's a free country out there. But the people's business needs to be done there. And at some point, we should ask the question, why is Code Pink doing what it does? Who donates to Code Pink? And what do they think they're accomplishing?
A couple of thoughts rattling around in my head. First of all, it's one of those moments where you're proud to be on the right, because while I'm sure there's been a conservative protester at some point over the years, I can't think of one, and certainly not one that does it as often as Code Pink. And secondly, if you're Capitol Police, I don't know how they decide who gets to sit in the committee room, but if you see women and men in pink T-shirts show up, especially if they've been arrested before, shouldn't you not let them in?
I was going to say, don't they go in there and say, hi, Medea?
Right.
Oh, man, it's been like 6 months since I dragged you out of here. So, you know. But, at the very least, the pink shirts should come with handles for easy dragging.
Jim, enjoy your time in the Big Apple. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm sure you're really excited for Obama's farewell speech tonight.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait. Popping the popcorn. you know the best part of the farewell speech, Greg?
The end?
Farewell. Tomorrow, Greg.
See you tomorrow. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.